It is highly illogical, Captain, to presuppose that two main characters could effectively carry an entire film without the slightest indication of an influence character or relationship story. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I'm your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 12, Star Trek, the case for writing a screenplay with Dramatica. How awesome is that? My own theme song! I asked my son, Alex, who's a composer, to write me something for the podcast, and he did an amazing job. My own personal in-house Hans Zimmer. Speaking of which, now I don't have to worry about paying the Zimmer Corporation royalties anymore. The track is called, Dad Epic Music. No, I don't think that's what it's called. That's what the file is called. No, it's called Walking on Fire. His name is Alex Hull, and you can find that track, along with a bunch of other really amazing tracks, at his SoundCloud, which is at soundcloud.com/Operation Solus. And there's a dash in between Operation and Solus. In fact, you know what? It's so awesome, we're gonna play it again. Awesome is that? What can I say? Life is amazing, which we will get into right after follow-up. So follow-up for last week. On Narrative First, we installed some new features. The Story Forming series is a new video tutorial series where I compress a 2-hour Dramatica users group down into 15 minutes. Last week I went and saw Hunt for the Wilder People, which is a great film out of New Zealand with Sam Neill in it. And I was so impressed with the story that afterwards I sat down with my girlfriend, who really doesn't know that much about Dramatica, but can intuit a lot of stuff. You know, if I show her two quads, she'll be able to pick which one is the right one. And we sat down after lunch and talked about it and came up with a story form, which is what you'll see in the first story forming series video tutorial, which you will find at narrativefirst.com/storyforming. And that's going to be a regular series. The next feature we installed were the character arc snapshots, which are short 2-minute character arc videos where I go through and show the main character resolve and main character growth of a main character in a film. And if you know Dramatica, you know that when people speak of character arc, they're actually speaking of two story points, the main character's resolve and the main character growth. The resolve is the state part of the arc, you know, how it is at the beginning compared to how it is at the end. And then the growth is how they grow to that place where they can either change or remain steadfast. And that's the process part of the arc. So you have the state and process. And if you know any secrets about Dramatica, If you've seen Melanie's Secrets of the Quad video that we did last month, you know that every quad has two pairs. One's a state, and the other one's a process. So in the character arc snapshots, I did those a couple years back, so you'll see it actually says Story Fanatic at the end, which was the silly name of my site before I came up with the ultra cool narrative first. I will go back in and rebrand those, and then of course there will be more characters, probably because they're so time consuming. Probably do one a month. That's the idea. And then the last feature we installed, which is basically just a cleaning up of the website, is the story concepts page, which is at narrativefirst.com/archives/concepts. And you will see every single story point that's covered in the article. So if you want to read all the articles that are about story goal, you could go there. If you want to read all the articles about the main character growth, you could go there. Any story point that you've seen or heard mentioned on Narrative First is listed there. And you'll find the character arc snapshots at narrativefirst.com/character-arcs. We also added download links to every podcast on the site, so you will be able to go and download the MP3s directly, listen to them at your leisure, and then later on today we will have a place where you can just download an archive of the entire thing all at once. Okay, so now back to how amazing life is. Best thing about going full-time with story consulting is interacting with super talented writers, people who know story and just intuitively get story structure. I spend less time explaining to them and more time experiencing the story development process with them, which is what I love more than anything. For years, story consulting was always my side hustle. It was something I did to generate a little extra income and have fun with Dramatica at the same time. At DreamWorks, you could always see me run, grab some lunch from the cafeteria, eat real quickly, and then spend the rest of my lunch break consulting or writing articles or developing material for Story Fanatic. But unfortunately, you can only get so far part-time. And I'm not talking about the amount of projects. It's not, you know, how much time I could actually spend on them. I mean, it was that too, but I'm thinking more about the quality of the consulting. You know, the more time I had to actually think about the other projects and to sit and develop ideas and not worry about finishing scenes for movies, the more insights and more effective I became in helping people to write better stories. And it's just grown exponentially since I took this thing full time. I mean, I've been pretty lucky with some of the clients that I've been able to work with, talented people, and you don't have to explain story to them, and it's not about their own personal problems that I have to be their personal therapist for. I mean, it's people who actually want to write stories. But since I took this thing full time now, it's incredible the quality of writers and people that I get to work with. I feel really grateful and really lucky to be able to do this. And the great thing is I actually learn more about Dramatica in the process. So take, for instance, this one writer I started working with last month, okay? She's definitely one of those intuitive writers I mentioned earlier. She totally gets story, and it's a joy to work with her. Hilarious, just spot on, knows everything. But there was one story point in her film that was driving me nuts trying to get across, and that was the story judgment. Okay, for those who don't know, the story judgment is the judgment the author puts on the efforts to resolve the story's central problem. So in most narrative, this comes across as whether or not the main character resolves their own personal angst. It could be the story as a whole or how the author wants the audience to feel, but for the most part, it shows up in the main character's angst. Is it gone or is it still there? You know, if they're still moping about with their own personal problems, then the author is basically saying the judgment of the story is bad. And you can think of something like The Social Network, okay? So Mark Z may have come up with the greatest idea for a social networking platform ever, but he still didn't get the girl, right? He's still clicking refresh there at the end. That's a bad judgment. And you can compare that to something else like Clint Eastwood's American Sniper. Even though he loses his life in the end, Chris Kyle is in a much better place than when he started. Returning home, he puts his family first. That is the author saying that Chris made a good judgment call, changing his priorities from military to family, okay? So Aaron Sorkin made the judgment that Mark Z's efforts to create the greatest social networking platform ever was a bad thing, and the filmmakers behind American Sniper showed that Chris Kyle was right in choosing family over military, and that's a good judgment. So back to my client. I spent a couple days practically begging her to write in some kind of story judgment, like over and over again. Could you please just write anything? It doesn't have to be specific. Just tell me how you want people to feel at the end. But I just couldn't make it happen. I even tried the reversed approach to writing that I've mentioned here and in the weekly newsletters that Melanie came up with and that I'm starting to use with clients, where we start at the end of the writing process as far as Dramatica is concerned and work backwards towards a story form instead of starting with a story form starting out. So essentially you start with a story point, like story judgment, and you just write that, not thinking whether it's good or bad. You just write what it is you want your world to be like in the story. And then later we can decide whether or not it's good or bad. So I tried that approach, and that didn't work. No dice. So no matter what I tried, the ending of her film always remained nebulous. The rest of it's great. It's really clear. It's funny. All of it plays out. But the end, it was just kind of left up in the air. And at first, I attributed it to her not wanting to make a definite statement, which is something that I used to experience a lot when I taught at CalArts. I taught story at the California Institute of the Arts for 7 years, and a common thing, besides everybody giving up on their film with only 4 weeks left to go, the other common thing was not wanting to be definite about their ending, not wanting to actually say something. I mean, there was one person who listened to me, and, you know, he's writing and directing films for Sony now, so I guess I was right. It's always great when your students do better than you do. So this was something that I had experienced at CalArts, and I figured this was just the same thing. Not that she's a 22-year-old student who doesn't know what they want to do, but just an artist that doesn't want to make that statement yet, isn't confident yet in what it is that they want to say. So I took it upon myself to figure it out once and for all just for myself. I gave it a couple days so I could get away from it, and came back and sat down and started to go through all her notes. The way it works is people send all their stuff in, character sketches, ideas for scenes, all that stuff, and then go through it, and I try and figure out the story form for it. And we had done that previously, and had come up with a story form that we were working off of. So this time, you know, I took a couple days off, went back, sat down, and really pored over it, trying to get the essence of the story she was trying to tell. And again, because it's full time, I get to put all this effort into it. And my first realization was that we had started out with the wrong story form. The one that we had come up with before, it was unique, but it wasn't what she was actually trying to say. The real story form was clear as day. I thought for sure the overall story through line was in fixed attitude, but it was really obvious that it was supposed to be in psychology and that the main character was in fixed attitude. Once I made that adjustment, all the pieces began to fall into place, and I narrowed Dramatica's, Dramatica starts out with 32,768 story forms. I narrowed it down to two story forms. So guess what that last choice was? That's right, the story judgment. It had absolutely no effect on the meaning of the story at all. It could be a good judgment, or it could be a bad judgment. Every last other story point would be exactly the same. So it doesn't matter whether or not she had a judgment in there or not. It was crazy. Dramatica predicted the entire story form all the way down to the exact signpost order for each through line. Regardless of whether or not we chose good or bad, the story was going to play out exactly the same. Her writer's intuition was already telling her that the story judgment didn't matter in this story. That's the crazy part. In fact, by leaving it nebulous and open to interpretation, it actually opens up the meaning of this story and communicates something even more powerful than if it was clearly defined. These are the moments that I love about working with Dramatica. And it's also why I would never want to unravel the story engine or be able to predict on my own where story points would fall. There's some discussion in the discussion forums of Dramatica where people, they say they're not trying to unravel the story engine, but it's really apparent that they are. And it's funny because it happens every year around summertime. Everybody wants to figure out how Dramatica works instead of actually using Dramatica to write stories, because it's much easier to try and unravel a theory of story than it is to actually write a story. This usually happens around July, August, until September hits, and then everybody panics because they have to start writing for school again, and then they drop the whole thing. But that's why I would never want to actually know how the story engine works or where a story point would want to fall. It would be like walking the underground tunnels at Disneyland or shooting hoops in the Matterhorn at the basketball court there. Like, I don't want to know what happens behind the scenes because I like the magic. I like to, you know, whatever little magic is left in the world, I would love to experience it. And I get to experience it working with writers and Dramatica. I mean, how great is it that this writer, who is obviously talented and can write, that her intuition knew that the story judgment didn't matter. And then there's this application that can look at all the various story points that she had come up with for her story, put them all together and say, you know what, in this story, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, the audience is going to feel the same. I mean, that's incredible, and that's an awesome thing to see. So experiences like this totally confirm Dramatica's magical ability to predict a writer's intuition. And yeah, having dramatic on your side, it gives you that extra boost of confidence. So it's like you go with your intuition, and then you can see like, oh, wow, I guess I was right. You know, eventually it'd be nice to get to that place, but I'm sure even the greatest writers have a little bit of doubt. Speaking of writers who have a little bit of doubt, let's talk about Star Trek. Over the weekend, I saw Star Trek Beyond and absolutely loved it. I like Star Trek. I was a big Next Generation fan. Not so much the first series, because it seemed cheesy, the special effects. The films, I loved Wrath of Khan, obviously, because there's a story form there. But I like Next Generation. I liked Voyager. Deep Space Nine was a little too political for me. And, you know, Enterprise we don't talk about. But we can mention the latest reboot. The 2009 Star Trek film, I thought was great. Totally captured the spirit of the original franchise while casting it into a strong and new narrative. And much of this can be attributed to that film's really strong story form. In fact, there are rumors that the film from 2009 was written with Dramatica in the back pocket of the screenwriters. If you watch it, there are moments where you're like, oh, wait, I think this might be a signpost. Whether or not it's true, you can see the story form carried out in many scenes, especially, you know, the way they encoded the relationship story solution at the end is so spot on that it almost feels like old Spock, Leonard Nimoy, is reading from the Dramatica Theory Book Dictionary. I mean, saying that it's an act of faith when the relationship story solution is faith is pretty clear. But I don't know what happened after that film. It's almost like someone forgot to reinstall Dramatica after they upgraded their MacBook. You know, that happens. Sometimes you forget to load up one of your old programs when you get a new computer. I think that's what happened on the last two Star Trek films. The second film was abysmal in terms of story, and this last one, while it's not as bad, still fails to make a complete argument the way that first 2009 film did. And it's too bad because it starts out so great. The first 30 minutes are so much fun. A really strong main character through line in Kirk. In fact, I remember when I was watching it was so strong, my mouth started to drop open because I couldn't believe I was actually watching a Star Trek movie. It was like, oh my god, this is going to be great. And that's probably why they replaced the director, because it was good. It's kind of like Brave, where they didn't feel comfortable taking time out to actually, you know, tell a complex and unique narrative. So they replaced it with somebody else who's a little more boy-friendly, I guess you could say, male-friendly. So what we got was fun. I mean, I love Fast and the Furious. I like it. And so Fast and the Furious in space is great. I love Beastie Boys. But, you know, in those first 30 minutes, there are things that happened to the Enterprise that I thought I would never see, and I loved. I was like, you can't do that. But they did. It was great. But then the story fell apart. So the first biggest problem is the two main characters.
It is highly illogical, Captain, to presuppose that two main characters could effectively carry an entire film without the slightest indication of an influence character or relationship story.
Both Kirk and Spock, who were main character and influence character in the first film, in fact, I think it was originally written with Spock as the main character in that film, and then they just flipped it, which makes sense. But here, they end up with the same exact perspective in the film. You know, main character and influence character are supposed to have competing perspective, competing points of view, and that's where the emotional argument of the story is carried out. But here, they're both main characters. I mean, Kirk's obviously the main character, and Spock is kind of just off on the side there. But they both want out of Starfleet. They both want disunity, which is also what bad guy Krall wants, right? So that works out great. You know, whenever you can tie the main character's personal issue with the overall story issue, it's a great way to bring meaning to your work, because you're looking at that issue both subjectively and objectively, right? So you're looking at disunity from, let's just say from Kirk's point of view, and you're also seeing it from Krall's point of view in the bigger picture, you know, destroying the Federation.
Destroy the Federation!
That's my Krall impersonation. But then, so where is the voice of unity that you need, right? At first I thought it was going to be the alien that first comes aboard, right, and gives him that message, and she said what she did for her crew, which is, that's great. Oh, okay, so this is the voice of unity, and she's going to be in the relationship with Kirk, and I was really set for it. You know, she's not the nicest person, but at least, you know, she can get along with Kirk, and they can work off of each other, but no, she goes away. So then I was left wondering who was going to replace her, and so then I thought it was going to be Jayla, the Sophia Boutella character, the girl with the white face and the black cool lines. That's the alien scavenger that Scotty runs into. But it turns out she's a loner too and wants nothing to do with crew or Unity. In fact, if anyone in the film is for Unity, it's Scotty, which would make sense since Scotty wrote the film. So it's almost like he's trying to write himself as the influence character, but he never really gets together with Kirk or with Spock. You know, there's no relationship there that he develops with anyone. He just ends up being comedy relief, like he usually is. Great comedy relief, by the way. I mean, and there's even a moment when Jayla confronts Kirk through Scotty that would have been a perfect relationship story throughline moment, but it falls flat and fails to service the narrative, and it really just doesn't work out so well. So that just leaves Krall, which there is nothing better on this planet than watching Idris Elba act. Nothing. Nothing better. So I'm all for Krall, and I'm all for Krall being the influence character, but when you put the influence character role in the antagonist, you have to make sure he differs from the main character's point of view. But both he and Kirk share the same perspective on disunity, so their argument is like, the Federation is bad, needs to be disbanded. And Kirk is like, well, yeah, you know, I kind of want to leave too, it's kind of boring. So they're on the same side, so they really can't have any kind of meaningful emotional argument there. This is why that moment at the end where Krall pauses to look at himself in one of the shards of glass seems so completely off and completely out of nowhere. It's like, is he questioning his resolve there? It would make sense if Kirk was somehow for Unity and that he managed to bring Krall back to crew first, thereby making Krall a changed influence character. It certainly would have been a better ending than the Deus Ex Machina where Spock and Bones come out of nowhere to save Kirk from the turbine. I mean, they just pop up and go, hey, we saved you. Krall would have changed. He would have supplied that changed dynamic that you need in a story. And I mean, it would have taken a significant amount of reworking in the earlier parts of the script. Of course, you know, with Krall and then definitely with Kirk, he would have to be rewritten to be more of a steadfast character along the lines of Woody in the first Toy Story, you know, where it seems like he's a changed character, but really he's a steadfast character. So Kirk would be, you know, all for Unity right at the beginning of the film and then have that stripped away and that belief torn down until finally he makes that choice to remain steadfast. That way, through his relationship with Kirk, Krall could have eventually changed to a point where he sees crew first and believes in the Federation again and then sacrifices himself for them. That would have been a great emotional ending. Plus, it would have been cool because you would have had more Idris Elba moments, and that's always a good thing. But unfortunately, that's not what we got. And you can tell the filmmakers were thinking about it because there really was no influence character. It's like, that's why they threw that moment in where he looked at himself in the reflection. But because there's no setup, he just grunts and goes back to attacking Kirk. So it's a good grunt because it's an Idris Elba grunt, but nevertheless doesn't really service the story. As a result, you got a film that is super fun, but will be quickly forgotten in a month or two, for sure. You know, doesn't stack up there with Wrath of Khan. I don't remember a single thing that happened in the second Star Trek film, except I think Benedict stuck his arm in a tube or something. I just remember him being behind a piece of plastic glass or something, and that he was like really super tall. But other than that, I have no idea what that story's about. And I will definitely feel the same about this film in about 2 months, 3 months. I'll remember the first 30 minutes for sure, because it was the start of a narrative. But the rest of it, I couldn't tell you what happens and in what order. But one, the first Star Trek, that 2009 film, that one, you know, which definitely makes the case for writing a screenplay with Dramatica. It's been 7 years, and I could still tell you what happens in that film and who changed and how Spock, you know, grew from somebody who was completely uncontrolled to somebody who was more in control of their emotions, and how cool that was that it wasn't about logic or feeling with him, that it was actually about uncontrolled and controlled. Like, that stuff you can see in the film and you remember it because there's some meaningful change there. And that's because it's a complete story, and that's what Dramatica does. It helps you understand your intuition so you can write a better story. That's it for this week's episode of the Narrative First podcast. Alex here will take us out with this epic music that is the greatest thing I've ever heard. You'll be hearing a lot more of this in the future. Once again, visit his SoundCloud if you have a chance. Next week, the podcast is going to get even more epic with the arrival of our first guest, head of story on Disney's Moana and an amazing artist, David Pimentel. He's going to be stopping by to talk about all things story. Have fun writing, and we will see you next week.